Okay, everybody, let's settle in and proceed. Let's get started. So I'm going to go ahead and start. My name is Chris Jekyll. I am the first vice president for the Illinois Association of Blind Students, and on behalf of all the Illinois Association of Blind Students, as well as Brianna Lilliman, who is our president. She's running a little bit late this morning. Her train's delayed. So I'd like to say thank you to everybody for showing up. We appreciate you guys coming out. We have a great agenda packed for you today. And I'm briefly just going to tell you a little bit about IABS, what it is exactly that we do, and then tell you about our agenda today. And I got to ask you guys, if you could keep it down, I know it's exciting and everybody's talking, but if you guys could bring the volume down just a notch, because we want to make sure that we can hear everything, because we got some great speakers for you today. We're going to hear from the scholarship candidates who are going to tell you a little bit more about themselves. And in order to do that and to make sure that everybody can hear what's going on, it's going to be very helpful if you all can keep an eye on the volume. So thank you very much in advance for doing that. And so let's proceed. So again, my name is Chris Jekyll. I'm the first vice president here for the Illinois Association of Blind Students. What we do is we provide a lot of different services for our blind students here in Illinois. We are part of the National Association of Blind Students. That's NABS, which is, you know, based, headquartered there over in the center in Baltimore. And we actually have the president of the National Association of Blind Students, Sean Whalen, who's going to be speaking to us today. So we have the president here. So that's very good. A big round of applause for Sean. And hey, yeah, let's give it up for Sean, coming all the way out, coming to visit us. All right. And some other speakers as well. But again, for IABS, what we do is we provide scholarships along with, well, with the NFB. We are, you know, we work with the NFB to use the scholarship money to, you know, let me just say that over again. So the NFB of Illinois actually gives the scholarships away, but oftentimes the winners join IABS as a way to kind of get involved and really see what the student wing is about because, you know, the IABS students and really NABS students in general, all the different affiliates, you know, the students are the future. I mean, it's not just a saying. It is true. And especially with changing technologies, IABS is there with all the other divisions where all the students talk about everything they're using from JAWS, Zoom Text, Window Eyes, Dragon, Kurzweil. And so it's a chance for students to talk about techniques, what works for them, also getting your accommodations met, making sure that we're using the best strategies, you know, staying up to beat on, you know, advocacy strategies for ourselves. Also, you know, it's a great moral support. You know, everybody in this room can attest to that, you know, things aren't always easy, and we have to rely on one another for personal strength as well as, again, providing techniques and shared best practices. So this is a very great organization. I can't say enough good things about it myself. I think I've been in the organization for 4 or 5 years. So moving on. Today we've got a great, great, great program. We have Sarah Luna, who's going to talk to us about judo. We were just talking before we started, and she's a green belt, which to me sounds like she can – it really sounds like she can beat me up belt. Okay. So Sarah's got some great things she's going to tell you about it. Also, we're going to hear from the scholarship candidates. They're going to come up here and tell you a little bit more about themselves. You know, fortunately for us, some of us who were at the scholarship dinner last night, we got a chance to hear a little bit about the candidates and kind of, you know, what their feelings are and descriptions about what it is exactly they're doing. So we're very excited that, you know, you get the opportunity to meet them as well. Also, again, as mentioned earlier, we're going to have our keynote speaker, Sean Whalen, who came all the way here from the East Coast, where he's actually attending Harvard University. So he's going to talk to us about NABS. And then we're going to hear from our interns, the internship panel, which is Adrian Faulkner and Jacob Ayers, who are going to tell us about their NFB internship experiences. So again, very exciting, very, very practical stuff that's that you want to hear about. And then lastly, we're going to have Katie Lynam come up here and kind of lead a panel discussion for really what all the blind students need to be thinking about now. And that's not just blind college students. This is high school students. These are even the middle school students, because these issues aren't going away. And the sooner that you really become acquainted with what it is exactly that we're doing and what, you know, the student needs to understand on a personal level for advocating for their own needs, as well as, you know, being a part of the larger NFB, the better. So this is a very, very good program that we've got for you today. So without any further ado, we're going to go ahead and just proceed. So I am going to pass it over to Sarah Luna, and she's going to talk about judo. So let's give Sarah Luna a big round of applause.
Hello, everyone. Well, as you already know, I'm Sarah Luna. I'm from Chicago, and I'm a senior at Walter Payton College Prep, and I am involved with the NFB through their Freedom Link program. And I guess my mission for, like, the next 15 minutes is to kind of take you guys verbally through the amazing journey that has been the last 5 years of my life with judo. But before I start with that, I suppose I should, like, explain what judo is for those of you who don't know what it is. Because despite not being very popular in the United States, it is the second most played sport in the world, next to soccer. Yeah. You'd never know that. You would never. Yeah. All right. You would never know that, like, living in the United States, because it's just, like, not that well known. But judo is a grappling sport. It consists of... It consists of throws, pins, and submissions, and it is one of the very few sports that is in the Olympic Games and in the Paralympic Games. And we also have a colored belt system, like they do for, like, karate and taekwondo. And so, yeah, like, I started, my first day in judo was 5 years ago, January 9th, 2010. And when I first went in there, I wasn't sure what to expect, but I definitely got more than what I bargained for. I met, like, the most amazing coaching staff ever, and just a group of people who were more, like, able and willing to make everyone comfortable and just work towards everyone's needs. And the thing that really struck me about judo that, like, I just was enamored by is that in judo it doesn't matter that you're visually impaired. It does not matter at all. You can still learn everything that the kids who can see learn, and I can do everything that the kids who can see do, in some cases better than they can. For example, I have a training partner. Her name is also Sarah, which elicits many jokes from our senseis, and we work so well together, even though she can see and I can't. But with judo, it doesn't matter. Let's see here. In the beginning, it was really fun learning. I can't, like, explain to you how amazing it was to throw someone for the first time. It just, I felt so tough and just really cool. And it was a rush. Like, I can't explain it. It was just amazing. So I'd say after a year and a half of learning and throws and pins and stuff, I fought in my first tournament. And naturally, I was excited and nervous, but I was surrounded by a bunch of my friends, and we just had a blast just waiting for our matches. And when it came time to fight, I didn't do so well. I believe I got third place in a division of four, but I fought two girls who could see and one girl who's also visually impaired, but that first taste is all I needed, and it was off to the races from there. throughout the next year and a half, I believe I've competed in 7 judo tournaments. And at some tournaments, I fought girls who couldn't see, and at others, I fought girls who I could see, and others, a combination of both. And so throughout all of this, I grew to really love my training partners. Like, I don't just see them as, like, regular friends. I see them as my judo family. That's what they are. Like, my senseis are, they're like my best friends in a way. Like, I respect them, but I could, like, talk to them about anything, and they're just so smart and just so willing to help me and anyone else who's visually impaired at our club. In fact, 2 years ago, we were named the National Paralympic Training Center for judo, and we were dubbed this distinction by USA Judo, which is the governing body of judo in the United States, and we're the only club in the country with that distinction. So we definitely specialize in teaching athletes who are visually impaired. That is a big deal. So after 2 years of competing, we decided that it was time to go to the next level, and that meant national and international competition. So last year, we competed in 3 international tournaments, and believe it or not, they were all in the same weekend. Yes, I fought 2 tournaments in 1 day. It was very brutal, but very fun. And it was the Junior World Championships for Paralympic Judo, the Pan American Games, and the U.S. Open. And I was the only member of Team USA who competed in all 3 tournaments because everyone else was either too old or didn't qualify for them. It was amazing. Like, the honor just to represent the United States of America in an international tournament, it was amazing. It's just, I felt so proud to be an American that day. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm trying to remember what I was going to talk about next. Oh, that's right, that's what I was going to talk about. All right, so I really feel like judo has made me a stronger person. It's definitely made me have stronger will. It's definitely made me a more competitive person, because before I started in judo, I believe I was very chill. I just really didn't, it's very passive and didn't really let anything happen. But now I just, like, I'm the person who makes things happen. I, like, will volunteer to go first in anything, and just, it's made me, it's definitely tested my will and made me push myself to go farther than I would have never otherwise dreamed. And since I mentioned the past, let's talk about the future. In 4 weeks, I'm going to compete in the national tournament, which is the President's Cup in Texas. And if I win there, then I will qualify for the World Championships, the Senior World Championships, which will be in Seoul, Korea next May. And if I do well there and I win in another big tournament, hopefully I will qualify for the Paralympic Games in 2016. Thank you. And if I had just one closing statement, one last thing to make everyone think, I would say to never be afraid to take a chance, because if someone came up to me 7 years ago and said, hey, you're going to love, and I mean love, a sport like judo, I know I would not have believed them. But I'm glad I took this chance, and I'm glad I wasn't afraid. So thank you.
That's great, Sarah. Now, I hope it's okay with everybody, because we're actually right on schedule. I wanted to just ask Sarah a couple questions, 2 questions, and we won't turn this into a huge interview.
Whoa, we're on schedule? But that never happens.
Yeah, but I wanted to ask you, so, you know, when you're out, like, if people here who had just heard what you said, they want to get involved, could they come and just ask you for contact information, or what would be the best way for some people here today to get involved in judo?
Oh, yeah, sure. You could come and talk to me, and I'll gladly give you the information, or you could look up brettwolfjudo.com. It's the website of my sensei, and you can like read all about the different programs we have and the different types of classes we have for people who are visually impaired to learn judo.
And just so everybody knows, Brett Wolf is a friend of the Federation. He's come in multiple times to set up judo demonstrations, so he's a really great guy. And then lastly, just quickly, if you don't mind, so would you say, I know you touched on this briefly, but like your judo in the 7 years, do you think that's definitely made you more confident in other areas of your life because like judo's been so good, so you that kind of crosses over into other areas, do you think?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I definitely am more outgoing and willing to try new things now, and it's just like just winning my first match just gave me such like a boost of just like, hey, I can be good at something, and it's like hard work does pay off in the end.
Yeah, it's just terrific. Let's give Sarah a round of applause.
Thank you, Sarah.
That's great. And, you know, if you want to come and just give me money, I can pull names out of a hat, and then someone can actually challenge Sarah to some judo in front of the room. You know, I'll keep...
NFT fundraiser
for next year. Right. Okay. All right, well, okay, so we're scooting along. So now, and I don't want to, you know, we want to definitely take our time with this next portion so you can really have a good chance to get to know our scholarship recipients this year. So I'd like to call all three of our scholarship recipients up to the stage, and you guys can come to either side. We'll give you guys mics, and then we're going to have you introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about yourselves and you know, what it is. Oh, I'm sorry. What's that? Oh, yeah, Deb, yes. I'd like Debbie to introduce them. Excuse me, I spoke too soon. I'd like Debbie to introduce them. Sometimes I speak before thinking. It's like a medical condition, I don't know. The doctors don't know what to do. Yeah, it's Debbie, I'm going to go ahead. Do you want to sit or do you want to stand? You want to stand? Okay, so right here in front of you, this is the lectern.
Okay.
Okay. Austin Mages and Salam Mohammed and Samantha Smolka, are you all in the room?
Yeah.
Okay, come on up, please. While they're making their way up to the podium, I just want to talk a little bit about the NFB of Illinois Scholarship and internship programs. We're going to be hearing more later on today about internships. And we do have, in addition to our scholarship program, of which you're about to meet our three 2014 scholarship winners, we also have an internship program, which is quite unique, and I would love for more students to apply to take part in it. Any student from 11th grade through college is eligible. And the way it works is the student finds some kind of volunteer work to do during the summer in some area that's career related, and that can be interpreted very broadly. And the NFB of Illinois will pay a stipend while the student is doing volunteer work. So it's a great way to build up your resume. It's a great way to have an answer when you go looking for a job and they say, well, what have you done? You're blind. We don't think you can do the job. And, you know, can you prove to us that you can do anything that's useful? And you can point to something that you've actually done. We've had a number of students over the years. We've had people who worked in childcare. We've had a young lady who was a veterinary assistant in a vet's office, and subsequently that developed into a paying job because they liked her so much. We had a fellow from downstate, from a farming community, who volunteered in a company that fixed farm equipment and golf carts and fixed engines, right, and tractor engines and things like that. And so really it opens up all kinds of opportunities. Last summer's intern volunteered in a Montessori classroom and did a variety of things, particularly music, but a whole lot of things, going with kids on field trips and et cetera. So that's our internship program. The National Federation of the Blind of Illinois and the National Federation of the Blind are our national organization run scholarship programs. Patty Chang chairs the national scholarship program, and I chair the state scholarship program. Any student who is legally blind and will be enrolled full-time in a post-secondary institution of higher learning, so that could be a community college, it could be a four-year college, it could be a professional training program, is eligible to apply. Our state scholarship program, we give away sometimes as many as five scholarship awards up to $2,000. And at the national level, the national organization gives 30 scholarships beginning at $3,000 and going up to $12,000. So this is not trivial. This is actually a real help with college funding. So I'm going to turn over the microphone now to our 2014 National Federation of the Blind of Illinois scholarship winners. And Chris, how much time does each one have? There's been a lot of that going on today. Two minutes each, and let's begin. Let's not do it in a boring alphabetical order today. Let's start with Salam Mohammed. So, Salam.
Hi, everyone. How are you guys today?
Great.
As you know, my name is Salam, and I currently go to Moraine Valley Community College. I am planning to study elementary education, and the main question is, why did I apply for the National Federation of the Blind Scholarship? Now, I know that everyone, thinks of blind people as, not the smartest people, or just because you're blind, you can't do what everyone else can do. Well, that's not what I believe. I believe that we are all equal and that we can accomplish the same things or do it even better than the regular person can.
Right.
And not just on our own. We have supporters, our teachers, technology, and even more technology that's coming out soon. And we shouldn't be ashamed of using those things to help us. It's not disappointing or a bad thing to get help from someone. It's actually a lot better. One of my teachers told me that when you get help from someone, you learn even more than someone that doesn't ask for help. So the people that have bullied us, told us we can't do it, right now they're either working at, Burger King or something, while we are getting our education and we are proving them wrong. We are. Yes. We are showing them that blindness, it's a power. We are the power. And we are the people that help inspire the next generation. And we will make a big difference in the upcoming world and society. And I also would like to be a great peer mentor to those that feel that they can't do it just because they are blind. I believe you can do it. you might need more help. But when I'm a teacher, I will put in those extra hours, even if it's 3 hours after school. I will help you. I will not let anyone or anything make you fail out of school or make you feel down about yourself. I will make you the best person you can be and proud of yourself. And I want you to tell, you know, future students, your friends, about your teacher that was from the National Federation of the Blind and that is helping you accomplish these things. So I'd like to end with, you know, we are all equal. So don't ever feel down about yourself. Everything's hard in life. Nothing's easy. But there is a way to get through it. And even if you need help, go for it. No one's stopping you. It's your choice. And we are the power. That's how I did it.
Thank you.
Okay, next I'd like to hear from Samantha Smolka.
All right, Samantha, yay! Mm-hmm.
Let's see if they can vote for me. Okay, can you all hear me?
Speak into the mic.
Yeah. Okay, so, my name is Samantha. I currently attend Northern Illinois University. I'm starting to become a special ed teacher, but I'm double majoring in both the teacher to visually impaired and learning disabilities, also minoring in mathematics. What Salam also said, I've been in the same shoes as her, as all of y'all have been. We've been bullied. We've been pushed down. We've been like, oh, you're not going to succeed in life. You're going to be the person on the street who's going to be like, help me. No, not today, not ever. And I'm actually warning you guys right now, if I see any of you on the street begging, I'm picking you up and taking you to an education center. I'm warning you. That's my teacher voice right now. But like, I want to be a teacher for special ed, to become a mentor, an advocate, a shoulder to cry on, to lean on, to ask questions. I'm in the same shoes. I was like them, and as a six-year-old girl, I remember all the stuff I went through, all the torturous, horrendous stuff, but I don't want my kids feeling that way. It's going to be an epic adventure, and I'm going to kill him. But I want to just end with one thing before I hand it off to Austin. We all need to step up in our game. Don't let people say you can't do stuff. You know your limitations. You know who you are. If people say that you can't do this, or you're never going to become, I don't know, an engineer, you're never going to become a teacher, you won't become a doctor, prove them wrong. Just get out there, live your dream. Follow your heart. Don't listen to the haters, because they will always hate you, but they're jealous. They're always jealous of you. That's why they put you down. So don't take that criticism, put it to your advantage, put it in their face, and be like, what now? You call me this? Not anymore. I'm not that person.
I have so much sass in there. Oh, God.
Your turn. And finally, Austin Mages.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name's Austin Mages. I think I've introduced myself to quite a few of you already. I am a student at the University of Michigan, which we all know is way better than MSU.
NIU.
Yeah. So even though you guys paint our diag, right? Yeah. You guys do have a good football team, all right? So I can't argue on that front. Anyway, I'm at the University of Michigan this semester. It's my first semester there. I transferred from a community college in Palatine, if you guys are familiar with Harper College. Yeah, that's where I transferred from. And so at the University of Michigan, I'm studying, I have two majors. I'm doing economics as well as financial mathematics. And my hope is to get into an investment bank in like a quant position. And maybe those positions are obviously difficult to get, but if not that, then as an actuary. So those are the two routes that I'm currently looking at. So maybe to go in a different direction than the other speakers did, I think I'd like to talk about maybe like some of like the preconceived notions for those who are blind. So I'll start with in high school I had a resource instructor, a vision teacher, or what do they call it, and she was highly influential to me in my success. And she, I'll tell you, before her, I was, you know, it's difficult to not be able to see, right? We all know that. But she refused to let me wallow in the self-pity. You know, every time I'd tell her, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that, you know, she would tell me, I don't even want to hear it. You're going to do it, and you're going to get it done, and you're not going to complain about it. And actually... just today, well, yesterday when I got here, I was talking to her. She actually lives in Ohio now. She moved, so she gives me a hard time about the Buckeyes, you know, because they're our rival. So I texted her, go blue, and I also texted her. I said, you know, University of Michigan's real difficult. You know, it's a different transition to a big four-year university from a community college. And I was saying, man, this, you know, real tough. And she replies back to my text message. She says, you know, put your big boy pants on. This is the real world. Life is hard. Just get through it. So, and that's something, you know, that was really important to me. Everything that she taught me, all those lessons that, you know, I can't say no. You can never take no as an answer. So I also find, and this is kind of another side story for me, but it's important to me, and I always think of this when I talk about, you know, my vision and dealing with it. I think it's important, the aura you give off as somebody who's blind or visually impaired is really important. I know when I'm with my friends or around other people, when I first tell them I'm legally blind, and I've spent already a few hours with them, and they go, what are you talking about? Are you crazy? they have no idea, because I refuse to take anything less than, you know, equal. So there was one time where I was in the gym. That's what I do with my free time. I spend my free time with my buddies, and we go lift in the gym. And we were in there, and I was being introduced to somebody. And he reached out for a fist pump or whatever, bump fist to say hi. And I grabbed his fist as a handshake. And, you know, I didn't see that's what he was going for. So it was a communication breakdown there. And he looked at me. I had the weirdest look on his face. I'll never forget it. And a buddy of mine said, oh, you know, I didn't tell you that he's legally blind. My friend's legally blind. And the look on the guy's face, are you crazy? He's legally blind because, you know, he sees me in there every day working hard, doing what everybody else is doing. And I can tell you that, like, nobody is able to tell because I refuse to submit, right? So for me, it's more about giving off a certain aura that, you know, you can do what you want to do, and people will have preconceived notions, but, you know, really what you give off may surprise people sometimes. And I think that's really important with the NFB and the NFBI in particular, where it seems that the major goal is to redefine, you know, what it is to be blind, right? So people look at it differently. Yeah, so that's really what I have to say.
Thank you.
So you've now met our very impressive scholarship class of 2014. Let's give a big hand to all three of these great students.
Let me find this mic. I always love hearing a guy say, well, you know, in my free time, I like to lift weights with my friends. I like to do the same thing, but it's I just love it. Okay, great. Well, that's good. You guys, if you want to hang out for a little while, you can, but you are certainly welcome to leave the stage and go back to your table. I think we're going to have a panel discussion in a little bit, so feel free to do what feels right and comfortable at the moment. We will now proceed. So we actually have our keynote speaker. We talked a little bit, told you a little bit earlier. Sean Whalen flew all the way here from Boston to be with us today, and now he's going to talk to you, tell you a little bit about himself and what he's doing in NABS, and also just a plug. I might have said this earlier. Tomorrow morning, in this room at 7 a.m., we are going to have the NABS, or excuse me, the IABS breakfast, Conference Room A, excuse me, I stand corrected. In Conference Room A, we're going to have 7 a.m., the IABS business meeting. We're going to be filling some new positions. And again, Sean will also be there as well. So we cordially invite all of you to be present tomorrow. But now I ask Sean to come on up and address the group. So let's give Sean a round of applause.
Hi, buddy. Right here in front of you is the podium. To your right.
I'm in, baby.
Okay.
How am I doing so far? We'll get a review afterwards. So thank you all for having me here. I appreciate it. Do we have students in the room here? We got some students? Yeah? We got some parents? We got some people with leftover cookies who don't want them? Because I don't like to spend my time in the gym. I like to spend my time eating cookies. So I've been asked to kind of come here and just talk to you a little bit about my personal story and my involvement and how I came to be involved with the National Federation of the Blind and work through the NFB within the National Association of Blind Students. So let me just give you a little brief biography background here. I am originally from Wisconsin. I graduated in 2007 from the University of Wisconsin. Go Badgers. Yes, thank you. And then I spent some time working in Washington, D.C. after a congressional internship that I basically got as a result of attending and taking part in the NFB's Washington seminar. But I'll get to that in a little bit. But that really opened up an opportunity for me. I went to D.C. I loved politics. I love public policy, and it was really the place for me. I fell in love with the city and being in the middle of the action, and I spent several years working as a lobbyist on social policy issues, disability rights, education, some healthcare stuff, on Capitol Hill. I wanted to be Rose Sloan before Rose Sloan was Rose Sloan. And I'm still striving. But after I did this for a while and kind of continued my education on the side and in the background somewhat, I decided to get back into being a full-time student. I went and was really interested in law and public policy and threw out a bunch of applications. And I ended up, I'm a grad student now in public policy at Harvard University, and I'm thinking about going to law school. Chris Jekyll is really selling me on it. And he's doing a good job, I got to tell you. He is a rational, logical man, and that's why he's an attorney.
Would this guy make a fantastic lawyer?
Shameless, Jekyll, thank you. So That's me, and that's what I'm up to right now. And as mentioned, currently I also serve as the president of the National Association of Blind Students, which is kind of the broader umbrella student group division of the National Federation of the Blind. And we have affiliates in most of the 50 states and would love to expand that. But that's what I'm working on most actively in the NFB right now. So I'll talk about a little of that also later, but just kind of wanted to tell you a little bit about my personal story, about why and how I came to be involved and why I choose to remain involved. And, of course, you know, we all have different stories, but I hope there's something in here that can kind of give you an idea of at least where I get the passion to do what I try and do. So I am blind. I've been blind since the day I was born. It took me almost 23 years to really accept that and come to grips with it and, you know, finally expect other people to accept it too. Because let's face it, if you're not comfortable in your own skin, if you're not happy with who you are or what you are, it's really hard to expect other people to have a level of comfort with it. So that was the big holdup for me. I spent many, many years trying to pretend I wasn't blind, trying to avoid anything that would make me appear as different or blind. So, you know, when my elementary school was failing to teach me to read Braille and my mom was in there fighting tooth and nail to make that part of the IEP, I wasn't helping because I didn't want to learn. I was perfectly happy not to be taught Braille. I was perfectly accepting of having the extent of my orientation and mobility training being pretty much going to the supermarket with my O&M instructor and doing her shopping week after week. You know, so I was not as on top of things as I, in retrospect, wish I would have been. And as I kind of touched on a little bit this morning, I can't express how grateful I am that my mother was and got it and saw that if I ever wanted to be successful at anything in life, that she would need to, you know, have expectations of me, hold me to a standard the same as she would any other kid. And, you know, look, when my school wasn't teaching me Braille, it was my mom who was sitting up with me night after night after putting my little brother and little sister to bed, reading fourth grade homework to me, coloring in the map of the United States, reading chapters to me, because I didn't know Braille, I didn't have the technology, there was no other way. So it caused me a lot of problems, not just being comfortable with the alternative techniques that I'd eventually come to embrace. And this wasn't just through elementary school, middle school, high school. It went straight up through college. I literally, until I was 23 years old, did not leave my house and go any place independently unless it was some place that I had been many, many times before and unless it was broad daylight and unless there was absolutely no other choice. That is extremely limiting. Just imagine if no one else is going, you're not going anywhere all the time. And it was extremely difficult, and it hampered my social life, it hampered my academic life. Well, I'd love to be a part of this club, but they meet at 8 p.m. and it'll be dark, so I guess I'm not going to do it. I'd love to go out and meet some people, but my buddies don't want to take me out to the parties with them because for some reason, having a dude like me on their arm somehow inhibited their... Yeah, well, you know why they were at the party, right? They're there to meet women, and hanging out with me does not help in that objective. So it was really difficult for me. And finally, when I was 23, I had a life-changing experience. And I hear people say that a lot, and I think sometimes it's oversold, sometimes it isn't. And in my case, it was quite literally the truth. So in 2005, I won a scholarship from the National Federation of the Blind of Wisconsin, and had the opportunity to attend a national convention in Louisville, Kentucky as part of that scholarship. And there, for the first time in my life, I met blind people who had jobs, had families, had, you know, normal, quote unquote, I hate using the terms normal and regular. I'm normal, I'm regular. But they had lives, involvement in their community, things that they were passionate about, and they had people who relied on them for things, and it was everything that I thought blindness was not. I thought blind people were unproductive, unemployable, and just basically destined to live a life of people taking care of them. And I was really, really sure from a young age that that was not what I wanted. That was not what I wanted. And I reached the incorrect conclusion that, look, if that's what blindness is, and that's what I'm not going to be, then I'm just not going to be blind. And meeting people, I remember in particular Parnell Diggs, who is a attorney from South Carolina who is now politically active also. He's one of the first people I met in the NFB, and he was one of my scholarship mentors. And I saw, look at this guy. He's a lawyer. He's got a family. He's got it together in a way that I didn't think was possible. And just seeing that made so much difference. I went home from Louisville, Kentucky with a cane in my hand for the first time in my life, and have been using it ever since. And it has made such an enormous difference in my life. So the self-acceptance, the comfort with blindness, the saying, look, I'm blind, but blind isn't all that I am. I'm also a whole lot of other things, too, that are, frankly, way more interesting. Coming to that realization was huge. But there's other things that, in my opinion, to be a successful blind person, you really need to have a good grip on. And some of that I've also had the opportunity to learn a lot about and make serious progress on through the National Federation of the Blind. So when I was in that convention in Louisville in 2005, I met all kinds of students. I remember in particular meeting my friend Ariel Silverman, and she told me she was a biology major. And I was like, wow, but aren't you blind too? Yeah, she was, and she is, and she was a biology major and did real well at it. And just having the opportunity to meet other people and kind of get the, you know, tips and tricks on how did you do this kind of math problem, or in science class when you needed to diagram something for chemistry, how did you do it? Just having that resource of a network of people who have dealt with these same problems and already solved them stopped me from needing to solve every problem that came up like it was a new one. So that was huge. But just also some of the real core stuff that we talk a lot about here, but it's really important, just orientation and mobility, being able to feel that I'm confident that I can get myself from place to place, whether it be from the lecture hall to my apartment, whether it be from the internship back to school, whether it be, you know, in my professional life, getting to work and getting to meetings and having it be no question that I'm able to go out independently and do that. That's really big. Technology is absolutely crucial. Learning how to use whatever it is that, you know, is your most effective method. So I'm a JAWS user, screen reader. I know a lot of folks who are successful using magnification. And I know people who use all kinds of different Braille note takers, et cetera, et cetera. The key is, I think, being able to be comfortable with a variety of different options, because all these different products and software packages have different capabilities. And the more you know about all of them, the more places there are where you're not going to run into these barriers of inaccessibility or trouble doing things. So I would encourage that. That's something that I learned down in Louisiana when I took the training there. Just being able to sit down on a daily basis and devote the time to really digging into these software packages and seeing what they could do was really helpful, because honestly, I see a lot of students who just kind of use JAWS but are totally unaware, and I just speak of JAWS because that's the one I'm familiar with, but are really unaware with a lot of the deeper capabilities that it has. And you hear people who are like, geez, this is just so inefficient, I don't think I can do this, or how am I going to compete? A lot of times, and not all the time, there is stuff that's inaccessible, there are barriers, I've faced them, I know all of you have, but a lot of times it's just a question of learning more about how to do this, and then you can actually find really effective ways. So that's kind of one bit of advice I'd put to anyone. Really learn to master your technology. And the third, just in the skills category, would be reading Braille. So as I mentioned earlier also, despite the fact that I've been blind my entire life, my elementary school did not teach me to read Braille. They'd have an itinerant teacher come in from time to time, and we'd play around with a stack of cards that had the alphabet on them, but that's about as far as it went. And I got to tell you, that doesn't go so far. So, you know, I'd have my mom reading to me. I'd have a CCTV carted around behind me, which I still couldn't read, so an aide would sit behind me and read off the screen over my shoulder. The question that seems really, really obvious to me now is who? Who thought that this was going to be competitive in a university? Who thought that this was going to be competitive in an employment situation? Nobody, I think, is the answer. And part of the problem, I think, is that nobody really expected me to go to university or to be employed. So it wasn't an issue. But I took the time when I was 23, learned to read Braille, have become decent at it, although not great. And I will always regret I didn't learn as a child and, you know, have those speeds that I see so many of my friends just having such an easier time of things because they can read Braille really quickly. So that's kind of the package of skills. And one thing that I'd add just to the hard skills that I'm talking about of blindness, not only has being involved with the NFB and meeting people through NFB and NABS helped me obtain some of those skills, but it's also given me an opportunity to develop other kinds of skills that have absolutely nothing to do with blindness, like speaking skills, leadership skills, things like this. So there are a lot of great opportunities in the NFB to take leadership roles on projects, to get involved with things. I'll say it. It looks good on a resume. And I know that some of the things that I've done through the NFB have really made me a more appealing candidate for some of the public policy and legal stuff that I'm interested in doing. So it's that, but it also just makes you better at what you're doing. And I would can't urge enough to look for those opportunities to become involved and, you know, gain some skills and work on a cause or something that's important to you personally and something that impacts all of us. So that's the skills piece. And then there's a third piece that is possibly the biggest piece of the puzzle. I would suggest probably the most difficult and slow to deal with. So here we are. We've gotten to a place where, okay, I believe in the capacity of blind people. I think that I can do this. And all right, I went out and I got the tools required to enable me to do this job or do whatever it is that you're interested in doing in your life. But there's a third piece, which is you need other people to believe that you can do it too. And that is the hard part a lot of the time. And that is why involvement and an organization like the National Federation of the Blind existing has gone such a long way in helping shift the societal attitude. So it's slow and it's kind of arduous. And whether any of us likes it or not, we are all kind of an ambassador for blind people. And some of us don't like to be, and sometimes I don't like to be, but at the end of the day, what we're all doing is creating the perception of blindness among everybody who sees us. And the power of the NFB, and one of the things that is the most moving to me that I see us as an organization doing, is coming together and making a kind of proactive statement about what we think blindness is and what we think it isn't, and going and taking that message into the general public, both through the actions that we take as an organization and the things we say and the resolutions we pass, but also on an individual basis in the way that we live our lives. But I don't think I have to tell anyone. There's still a really, really long way to go. And I just think in my own life, and I'm sure all of you can probably pull up readily at mine numerous examples, but look, when I went to high school, the default position is that they were going to keep me in high school for 5 years because full course loads would just be too tough for someone like me who's blind. I don't understand it either. But they did it, and it's hard if you don't have that core and if you don't have those people backing you up to push back on that. Fortunately, I did, and I graduated high school in 4 years, which is no special accomplishment. Virtually everybody does it, but that's the baseline expectation we're working with. I know at the University of Wisconsin, I went and introduced myself to my professor after the first day of a microeconomics class. And he just told me, you can't be in this class. You're not going to pass this class. I was like, what do you mean? It's too difficult? You're concerned about the graphs? He said, you just can't be in here. I'm just not going to have you in here. And, you know, it sounds ridiculous, right? And I hear you, what? Yeah, and it's not 50 years ago. It is today, or 5 years ago at this point. But this stuff still happens, and it's still ridiculous, and especially in light of the kind of progress we've made on things like this. It is. And it's not just school. I've had job offers virtually evaporate the moment I walked in the door with a cane. Well, you said on the phone that I just needed to come in and sign this paperwork, and it was pretty much a formality. Well, the position shifted. We're not going to do that anymore. And this was for a telemarketing job, you know? Nothing that I think would be that difficult for someone who's blind to do and should not set off these alarm bells. But that's the reality of it. And I kind of want to talk to you all about one aspect of my personal story that I'm going through right now that ties directly into work that the National Federation of the Blind and NABS by extension are trying to focus on. And that's the TEACH Act. Is most of us familiar with that? Yeah. So basically it's a bill that's introduced in Congress that would set standards for what accessibility means for digital course materials. So think about digital textbooks, readers, tablets that are used in the classroom, course management software, web interfaces at the university, things that can really easily be made accessible and usable by blind students, but all too often just aren't. And no, I don't think it's because universities are malicious and want to discriminate against blind people for the most part. I think it's just because people don't know much about it, don't care much about it, and don't think much about it. And by the time somebody calls to their attention an inaccessibility or a problem, it's, by that time, you know, costly to fix it and time-consuming to fix it. But if folks from the ground up would just build this technology with accessibility in mind from the start, we could get to a place where these problems are largely eliminated. So what this bill tries to do is to set out very specific guidelines for here's what technology should do to be considered accessible. And it really is something that I'm personally extremely interested in. I was really shocked when I arrived at Harvard last year. I was super pumped because they said, hey, all your readings are going to be posted online in electronic formats. I was like, hey, great. No more scanning or no more waiting for the DSS office to scan. This is going to be really easy. Unfortunately, it was not really easy. Most of them were very badly tagged PDF documents or things that had password protection that wouldn't let you strip the digital rights off so you could read them with a screen reader, things like that. And it didn't stop there. When it came time to register for classes, turns out you're blind and use a screen reader, you can't independently register for classes. You can't post comments on the discussion boards for the classrooms. You can't submit assignments electronically. You can't book space at the school for study groups. You can't. And I was shocked. I couldn't believe that what I was seeing today was so much worse in terms of accessibility than what I had back in Wisconsin, you know, 8 years earlier. But it was. And I'm working at the university to try and make fixes to this stuff, address these issues, work on the technology, work on the document conversion program there. But that's something that's eating up a lot of my time and effort that really, it's the university's responsibility to provide that. And I do believe that, by and large, at the university, people do want to provide accessibility. They just don't know how to do it. So the TEACH Act would go a long way toward solving that problem and letting people know, here's what you need to do, and then allowing them to have a very clear path forward of how to meet the needs of students like me and others who don't read print. And this is an effort that the National Association of Blind Students is undertaking, and I'll talk a little more about specific things that NABS is doing tomorrow at the student breakfast, but I just want to drop this one in here while I have everybody in the room. If you are a student, or if you have recently been a student, we are trying to collect stories about what kind of access barriers have you met in your education related to digital materials. Also, stories about what worked well for you. Were there instances where, hey, you had an accessible interface, or you had an accessible e-reader or something like that, and you were just able to right in stride, be there right alongside all your classmates and take part in everything they were doing, and how powerful an experience that was for you. We want to get that message out too. And I'm working with Lauren McClarney, who is she's Rose's colleague up in Baltimore. She's another governmental affairs specialist, to collect these stories. And then when we go to Washington seminar in February, we have students take the stories up to Capitol Hill and provide them to their members of Congress and the staff to really put a face on the issue and say, hey, look, here's someone in your district who's impacted by this, and here's why this matters. And I've heard that that was really effective. So we did this once before. We got about 40 or 50 stories. I know there's a whole lot more of us out there who have those stories. And to bring them to the attention of the people who make the decisions, I need you all to write them. So if you're able to do this, please get in contact with me. I'll be here the rest of the weekend. I'll make sure the contact information gets distributed in a way that everybody can have it. But please, let's do this. And this is a big place where we, the students, can take a real leadership role on an issue that the NFB is actively pushing and working on. And, you know, obviously it's important to us, but it's even more important potentially for people who come after us. And that's just kind of what I want to close with here. We have come as blind people, and particularly as blind students in this country, a really, really long way. They're, for the most part, students aren't just blatantly excluded from the classroom today, like was the case not that long ago. And I think I would just urge everybody who's benefited from the progress that we've made to recognize that the progress didn't just happen. It was people like us generations ago who stood up and made it happen, who were affected by this, who cared about it, and who took the time and energy to devote to making a difference and making it better for someone else who would come after them. And that's really what I want to call all of us to do. Think about not just how things are for you right now and how much better they could be, but think about 30, 40 years from now when another group of students is gathered in a room like this and assessing their situation and how things are for them. Will it be better or will it not? Because there's a real possibility that it not be better. Technology, the way it's advancing today, I think you all know. Look, it has the real potential to be a great equalizer and in a lot of places make it easier for blind people to compete than ever before. But it also has the potential to lock us out. And if technology develops in a way where access isn't at the core of that development, we could be living in a world where we're not just not moving forward, but we could be living in a world where we've actually lost ground and things are harder than they were. And that's not the legacy that I want to leave for anybody, and I don't think it's the legacy that any of you want to leave. So please, think about it. What do you want them to say in 30 years? Do you want them to say that, hey, it seemed like things were going pretty well, it was pretty easy, I did well enough for myself, and got a job, and that was it? Or do you want them to look back and see that, yes, when we were at a turning point or a fork in the road, people saw the challenges and didn't shy away from them, but actually stood up and said, look, we are going to be part of the solution. We're going to make a difference, and we're going to make sure that blind students in the future, here in America and all around the world, have real, true equality of opportunity. That's what I want to work for, and I'm asking each and every one of you to stand alongside me, and let's make that a reality. Thank you.
Starts with the letter C. Cookie starts with C. Let's think of other things that starts with C. Who cares about other things? C is for cookie. That's good enough for me. C is for cookie.
Wow, what a, let's give Sean another round of applause. Okay. Yeah. Such a, you know, thoughtful and sobering a speech about what's going on, and yeah, I think it's just it's very timely. So thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So okay, we'll move forward. So now I'd like to call to the stage Adrian Faulkner and Jacob Ayers, and they're going to briefly address, or actually take as much time as you want. Well, not too much time, but you know what time that's comfortable. We have to leave at 1? Okay, I thought it was 1:30. Got it. Okay, so then could you Ben briefly tell us about your internship experiences, and then we'll get the panel discussion going. So please give them a round of applause, Adrian Faulkner and Jacob Ayers.
Okay, hi, my name is Jacob Ayers. I'm not actually from Illinois. I live in Indiana. I'm not that far away, though. So I work, and I've been interning since February at the Field Museum of Natural History in Chicago. And so I work entirely on developing accessibility. So at the museum, there is and has been really no such thing as accessibility. If you Google accessibility at the Field Museum, you find accessible bathrooms and number one in the world, and that's all you get. So Since February, I've worked in 3 different departments. I've worked in exhibition design, education for public programs, and conservation. And what I've been doing within all of that is working to, one, learn how museum administration and design and whatnot works, and then take what I've learned from that and develop an accessibility program. And so what I'm doing is 3D scanning and 3D printing as much as I can of the museum's collection to make the most touchable environment you can get. And that's taking quite a lot of time because we got a lot of stuff. We're the 3rd largest natural history museum in the country. So we have 27 million objects that span 4 billion years of history. And so 250,000 of those objects are actually on public display. And I understand now why a lot of institutions don't deal with accessibility. For one, they don't know how to do it. And 2, if you're a large institution, it's just an insanely grappling concept to deal with. So it's been quite the adventure learning how to break all this down. And there's so many things you have to think of. You have to think of, okay, well, how do we present it? Then it's like, the new question is, okay, we've made all this stuff. Now how do we implement it? Do we go and make, like, backpacks for docents to carry around? Or do we plant, like, file cabinets throughout exhibitions and put it in and you go to it and you pull out all this stuff? Or do we make, like, just like boxes that you can carry around with a friend and be like, oh, this is this and this is this. So it's been an interesting world. But the thing that I've loved about it is they've treated me as a true professional. I didn't expect that. I expected to be treated like your typical intern of, you know, pushing papers and things like that. But the first day they sat me down in like a board meeting thing with all the exhibition department and they're like, we're open to all of your ideals. It's like, we've tried Braille on posts and a few touchable things here and there, but it didn't really work. And so the typical, like, touchable thing in an exhibition, in a small one, there's usually 1 or 2 touchable things. And there's usually, like, 400 or 500 items on display in a small exhibition. In a large exhibition that takes up, you know, a space 5 times this room is, there's 20 to 30,000 pieces out there, and maybe there's 10 things. So there's a lot you're missing out on, and there's so many things behind glass. So what else do you want me to touch on?
You know what? Just take another minute or two and tell them about anything.
Yeah, okay. So
how did you prepare for this?
How did I prepare for the internship? So I wanted to do a 3D printing project. I reached out to a lot of different groups to do it, and they all said, no, we don't want to deal with you. So I tried a museum. So I went and Googled museums in Chicago, because I live like 30 minutes away. Looked at the Field Museum first. Their CEO's email address is on the internet. I sent him an email, blah, 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 this is who I am. I want to do a project. You don't have this. Hour later, I got an email. We want you to come in and talk to us. So my first encounter was with the CEO of the Field Museum being like, you know, you don't have this. I'd like to do this. Would you let me do it? And 3 months later, it started up and we did stuff. Hey, so. Okay, so first of all, I don't have a lot of things done yet. I have a box of, like, so we're gonna talk about some of that in a minute.
Ten minutes, and he'll tell you all about it.
But I have a box of things here that we're gonna pass around of things that I have finished so far. But if you want to get a hold of me, JAYERS at fieldmuseum.org, and I can take you through to do that.
Okay, next, Adrian Faulkner, ladies and gentlemen.
The mic is about, and just reach out your hand there.
Make sure you keep that microphone.
There you go. There you go, Adrian.
And I'm really short, so. Okay, my name is Adrian Faulkner, and I'm a graduate student pursuing a master's degree in holistic studies, and I'm also getting a certification in mindfulness and psychotherapy. When I was getting my undergraduate degree, I did an internship doing school social work on three levels. I did early childhood, middle school, and also at an alternative high school. And I liked my internship during school social work, but it really wasn't my interest of something I could see myself doing in the future. I lost my vision in 2011, and from that, I became really interested in adjustment counseling and traumatic loss. So I decided that's where I wanted to do something in my internship field. I currently do my internship. I originally wanted to do my internship at the blind VA, but it was very hard getting getting the right contact and setting that up. So I found out that at the Illinois Center for Rehabilitation Education, they have a psychologist there, and they do psychosocial therapy there. So that's currently where I do my internship. I go 3 days out the week, and I am supervised under the psychologist. We have psychosocial therapy. I do biopsychosocial assessments. And basically what we do is we do adjustment counseling for people who have just lost their vision. Outside of doing adjustment counseling, I also provide resources for clients. And I also just really encourage the clients to basically advocate for themselves. In school, I'm enrolled in a mindfulness class, and I've been introduced into meditation. And for the clients that are willing to embrace that, hopefully I can introduce them to mindfulness meditation. So I hope to do that with my next semester. And I also have to do a second internship. I hope to do that. I'm really interested in working with veterans who have suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder. So I hope to get my second internship with the Wounded Warriors. And are there any questions? Or would you like for me to say anything else?
No, unless is there any, we're good? Okay, round of applause for our institutions.
So real briefly, before we conclude with the parents and send them off, I wanted to just point out that we are streaming this online, and there's somebody who actually has attended, I believe, 12 conventions. This is her first time that she's actually not been here and been listening online. Her name's Ronza Hoffman, and a lot of you know her, but for those of you who don't, Ronza's a big part of the family here. So on the count of three, I'd like you all to join me and say, hi, Ronza, okay? So on three, one, two, three. Hi, Ronza! Okay. All right. So thank you to the parents for coming. And here we really are appreciative that you came. And so I understand that we're sending you off to the next room. You're going to hear Jacob talk a little bit more about his projects. And now I'd like to... Oh, yeah. We are going to do the panel here. So I'd ask Sean to stick around up here. And ask Katie Lynham to come on up and all the other panelists. So I think Rose is in that mix too, and we're going to do the panel discussion for the students and talk about our two cents on the whole academic process and accommodations and advocating for yourself. So thank you very much, parents.